السلام على رسول الله وبعد. So as you can see in our discussion of Sharia law, we have discussed the lawgiver, the divided grant, we discussed the act of the morally obligated, and we have done now, consists of a demand, we have discussed the four types of demands. Can anybody mention to me the four demands? Violence in the crowd, huh? Makhdoum, okay, Sri. Makhdoum, Sri. Halal, okay, good. Yeah, that's four. Okay. So wajib, mandu, halal, and makhdoum, those are the four demands, okay? We now will be discussing the next category, which is the option, which is known, according to Sharia terminology, as mubah. Mubah. Now, before we get into the option, and we'd like to mention that the demands and the option together, these two categories together, are known as al-ahkam wa taklifiyya. Alright? Al-ahkam wa taklifiyya. Yes. The four demands that we mentioned, which were the wajib, the mandu, the makruh, and the haram, with the option, the mubah, those five rulings, okay, are collectively known as al-ahkam wa taklifiyya. Taklif, of course, we discussed, right, before its meaning, and we said the mukallaf was the one who was, he had which two qualities? Maturity. He had maturity and?
Reasoning,
right, okay. Or sanity, the same thing. So those four demands, and the option collectively are called the Ahkam al-Taklifiyya. And the declarations, we'll be discussing a number of them, are known collectively as the Ahkam al-Wad'iyya. But that's just something just to throw out there. Okay, Mubah, in its most simplest sense, there's not much really to discuss regarding Mubah. It means that action or that object in the Sharia, which either it makes no difference whether you do it or perform it, or if you leave it. I mean, it's exactly the same. It's equal. Whether you commit it, or you omit it, whether you do it or leave it, it's the same. It's an option. There is no ruling regarding this. Remember, the mustahab or the mandu was what? If you did the mustahab or the mandu, what would happen? You would be rewarded. If you left it, nothing, okay? The makruh, if you did it, what would happen? Nothing, but if you left it, it'd be rewarded. Well, the mubah is neither if you do it or if you leave it, if you forsake it, nothing. There is no matter required with it. Some other terms which are used by the scholars to refer to the mubah is al-halal. Al-halal is a term used by them. And I only write that in Arabic for those who want to. Also, al-hil, which is derived from the same verbal root as al-halal, al-hil. Alright? These are terms, similar terms, used by the scholars to mean mubah. Although, as we saw with the other terms, sometimes certain authors, certain scholars of usul al-fiqh, or sometimes certain legal schools will use these terms with some different shades of meaning depending upon the terminology they use. So always when you read a legal book, you have to be aware of the terminology used in that text. All right, now the matters which are mubah, okay, are of two types. We make categories, we can give two general categories for that. The categories of the mubah. There are those matters which the Sharia has indicated to be mubah. And there are those matters which the Sharia has remain silent on, remain silent concerning, and therefore our default, our mubah by default. An example of something which the Sharia has indicated to be mubah would be that verse in Surah, let me get the verse number for you. Surah, for instance, let us look at Surah Al-Ma'idah, verse 1, the first verse of the fifth surah. Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says that the behemothul an'am are halal for us. The behemothul an'am refer to four categories of animals, being sheep, goat, cattle, and camel. So here the Sharia has indicated that these animals are halal for us. Mubah. If one eats camel, does he receive a reward for it? No. Okay. One does not want to eat camel, does he receive a punishment? Or no. It's mubah. There are other matters which the Sharia has remained silent regarding. There's nothing specifically, there's no specific text, either in the Quran or in the Sunnah, which tell us, which tell us that that matter is mubah. And by default, we consider it mubah because we have a principle in the Sharia, which we'll be discussing when we discuss the Sharia maxims in one later lesson, inshallah, that all matters are lawful, except what the Sharia indicates to be forbidden. And likewise, all acts of worship are forbidden except what the Sharia indicates to be permissible. And we'll discuss that in a little bit greater detail in a later lesson, inshallah. But the point is that what the Sharia has, the categories of the mubah, some of that the Sharia indicates to be mubah, and others the Sharia has been silent on, and so therefore by default are mubah. Those which the Sharia has indicated to be mubah, if later on the Sharia changes its ruling, this is known as, it falls under the category of nesch, or abrogation. When the Sharia changes its ruling concerning, which was something which it indicated to be lawful, and then it says it's not. As far as that matter, which it was silent about, and then the ruling is changed, that is not considered an act of abrogation by the Sharia. Let me give an example. For instance, riba, okay, usury is the normal English translation, but the term is, riba is a little bit more comprehensive than the English term usury. There's verses which forbid in the Quran. Okay, prior to those verses, right, which forbid riba, it was mubah to take and receive interest. Okay? Now, when those verses were revealed forbidding riba, is that then considered an abrogation? No, because there was no text ever in the Sharia which permitted the use of riba. Unlike intoxicants, khamr, where there was a text in the Sharia which forbade people to approach prayer while intoxicated. The understanding then, therefore, would be that to be intoxicated during times outside of the prayer time would be lawful, mubah. And so therefore, that change in ruling, when Allah finally forbade the use of khamr at any time, okay, is then therefore an abrogation of the command. It's a nesh. So it's important for us to know, is this matter mubah because the Sharia had indicated to be mubah. So then therefore, if there's a change in the ruling, we say it's a time of abrogation. Or was it something which was the Sharia was initially silent on, and that's why it was mubah? So then later on, if a commandment appeared in the Sharia, either forbidding or obligating that matter, we will not call it then to be an abrogation. Are there any questions regarding the mubah? Yes.
Is the hadith of Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam when he told one of the Sahaba that, just in my words, that if he had sex relations with his wife lawfully, then he is rewarded for it, and he wanted to know why, because he wasn't doing it without any ibadah worship, is it? Because if he did it unlawfully, he'd be punished for it. Therefore, similarly, if you do something lawfully, you'll get a reward for it. And if it is authentic, then what does it do with the other things, like eating food, for example, which is lawful, as opposed to not eating it, which is not eating unlawful food?
Okay. The point is serious intention. The hadith is, the Prophet ﷺ did inform us that even in a person's sexual relations with his wife, he would receive a reward. The companion said someone would approach his, or you know, fulfill his desires and he would be rewarded. The Prophet ﷺ said, do you not see that if you were to place it in that which is forbidden, you would sin? Meaning that by placing it in that which is lawful for you, you would receive a reward. The understanding behind the hadith is that when that is done with the intention of protecting oneself from illicit sexual relations or fulfilling one's desires lawfully, fulfilling his wife's desires lawfully and so forth. And if that is the intention, then one receives reward. However, though, if one just does the act without any that type of intention or motivation, with that, then it becomes a matter which is mubah, and one does not receive a reward for. And the same thing with eating. If one eats in order to, with the intention, for instance, to preserve his strength so he can wage jihad, alright, this is one motivation, or to remain healthy so that he can worship Allah, then he receives a reward for his eating. And however, though, if he is, he has no intention, just eats because it's a bodily function, alright, then he receives no reward for that. Yes, brother.
You mentioned that in the Sharia, everything in worship is forbidden except that which is Allah. But in, what is the term outside of the worship?
It's known as mu'amalat, or interactions, human interactions.
Okay. Then the question is, one topic that comes up a great deal is what is bid'ah? You know, what is bid'ah of worship, which is, I understand, to be reprehensible, and what is bid'ah outside of worship, bid'ah of the dunya, I guess you could say, which I understand to be mubah. And how do you define, you know, what is reprehensible?
If the matter of bid'ah literally means that which is introduced, so if that matter which is introduced is sought by it to draw closer to Allah with that matter, it then becomes an act of innovation which is reprehensible. But if it's not sought by that to draw closer to Allah, then it is not reprehensible. So for instance, cars and airplanes and different types of garments like nylon and polyester, since they're not sought in and of themselves to worship Allah through them, they do not become acts of innovation which are reprehensible. But to add an additional rak'ah to dhuhr prayer, saying I want to draw closer to Allah, so instead of praying four, I'll pray five rak'ahs. That becomes an innovation which is reprehensible. That's just the general way of understanding. Okay, so I think now we understand the issue of mubah, right? And so therefore, the four demands, right, and the option, collectively are known as and ahkam wa taklifiyya. Okay. So now what we're going to discuss the declarations. Yes, brother. Al-ahkam al-wad'iyya. And we'll be discussing these declarations now. I don't know if we'll be able to get all of them in this class, but we'll continue, inshallah, in the next lecture after Dhuhr prayer and lunch. Thank you. In the most general sense, in order to distinguish between the two, the Ahkam al-Takrifi and the Ahkam al-Wadariya, turn it off, just shut it off. In order to, in the most general sense, the Ahkam al-Takrifiyya deals with those acts which pertain to our, The Ahkam al-Takrifiyya, right, pertains to actions that we do as the mukallaf. Okay, that's why they're called takrifiyya. All right, listen to me. I probably didn't state that very clearly. The Ahkam al-Takrifiyya deals with acts of the mukallaf and the ruling regarding those acts. Any act that a human being does, any action or statement or belief, is going to fall into one of those five categories. It's either going to be obligatory, wajib, recommended, mustahab or mandub, mubah, optional, something which is disliked and blameworthy or makruh, or something which is forbidden, haram. So the whole sphere of human activity will fall into one of those five ahkam of takrifiyya. Alright? There's no way it's going to fall out of that. Whatever is done by a human being, right? And of course, we mean, which human being here means a human being who is a mukallaf, right? Obviously, the child and so forth is not entering into that. Now, the ahkam al-wad'iyya, these declarations, are basically, you might think of them as signposts, as we'll see. Indicates used by the Sharia to toward making some sort of ahkam al-takrifiyya, and that will become clear. So the ahkam al-wad'iyya does not refer to these declarations by the Sharia, does not refer to something that the mukallaf does, but rather it's something that the Sharia has placed in order to indicate or make a declaration regarding a certain action done by the mukallaf. And this will become clear for us in a second once we look at some of the examples of the ahkam al-wad'iyya. Alright, the first of the ahkam al-wad'iyya, which we'll be discussing, is cause. And this is known as a seventh. Now let me give some examples. Okay. Pronounce. Right, these are some examples to help us understand this concept of a sebab. Pronouncement of divorce results in marital separation. The declining of the sun results in the luhur prayer. The possessing of the nisab, which is a minimal amount of wealth, and the passage of a year upon that wealth results in the obligation of zakat. All these matters over here on the left side are known as plural is asbab, but are each a sebab for this Sharia ruling, okay? So these are the rulings. I mean, marital separation, divorce, right? Lohar prayer, zakat. And these rulings would be fall under one of these five categories. But these are causes that lead to those matters. An example which we can find from the Quran, especially with the Zohar prayer, is Surah 17, verse 78, whereby Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala says, "Aqim as-salah li duluk ash-shamsi," establish the prayer for the declining of the sun. So Allah has linked the prayer to the sun's decline. And so therefore the sun's decline is a cause. Now, whatever one of these causes occur, this results in it, whether you intended it or not, okay? Whenever you pronounce divorce, it results in marital separation, whether you intended to divorce or not. And that's why the hadith mentions that three matters, whether you do it in a jesting or in a serious results in whatever it's divorce. The sun declines. Whether you intend to pray or not, the prayer has become obligatory. Okay. You possess the nisab, which is a minimum amount of wealth. All right. And a year has passed upon that wealth. Zakah becomes obligatory. Whether you intend to, pay the zakah or not. So once any of these causes occur, the result of that cause, the sharia, occurs irrespective if you intend to fulfill that or not. And so therefore we may define the sebab, to give it a definition, as a as an apparent fixed quality which affirms a judgment in that the lawgiver has linked that judgment to it. That's the definition of sebab or cause. No, we're talking here about, who's it, qadr? Where's that something to say? No. We're talking about what? Law here. Okay, remember in one of the first lessons we did, we said Allah is the judge in three matters, the sense of laws, okay, the commands and prohibitions, in the sense of his decrees, which is a qadr, right? And in sense the way he judges us on the day of judgment. And our whole discussion here on the Surah Fiqh is regarding what? The commands and prohibitions of the law. Those things which you can do out of your own volition. So Allah's decrees doesn't fall, this does not refer to that. And so therefore, cause in the legal sense, or a sebab, is and apparent means it's something is not hidden, it's something which is apparent, and it's fixed, it's determined. Quality which affirms a judgment, in that the lawgiver has linked that judgment to it. So, marital separation or divorce is a judgment which has been linked to the pronouncement of divorce. Whenever there's a pronouncement of divorce, this occurs. The prayer, Lohar prayer, has been linked to the decline of the sun. Whenever the sun declines, Lohar prayer becomes, the time for it comes in. Zakah is a judgment. which has been linked to the possession of a nasab and the passage of a year on that wealth. Whenever somebody has the minimal amount of wealth, the nasab, and a year passes on it, then the obligation for zakat comes about. Okay? For instance, qisas, right? The law of retaliation, right? Has been linked to murder. Okay? Whenever this judgment is linked to this, so whenever murder occurs, qisas is warranted in the Sharia. You can execute that person for taking someone's life. And murder, of course, in the Sharia sense means what? That just for the sake of knowing, it means to kill someone with an instrument that normally results in death, and to intend that, and that the person killed is ma'asum, which means his blood is unlawful to shed, blood unlawful to shed, and for the killer is a mukallaf, which we know what mukallaf means. So, I mean, that's what we mean by murder, just to give the Sharia term. So, okay. If you kill somebody with an instrument which normally kills, results in death, intending to kill him, and the person killed is ma'asul, means his blood is unlawful to be shed, and you are a mukallaf. So whenever this results, qisas can occur. This is the cause, this is the effect. I see faces that seem to be at loss, huh? Is this clear, or any questions? Okay. Now, there's another term which is similar to a sabab, which is al-illa. I'd like to write it here, al-illa. All right. Many scholars we use the term as-sabab and al-illa interchangeably in their writings. However, some of them will make a distinction, which we want to just mention, even if it's just in passing. And al-illa, they would define it as when the reasoning behind the cause is apparent, and sebab when the reasoning behind the cause is unapparent. That murder results in qisas is apparent. What's the wisdom behind that, okay? You take a life, your life is taken. We understand that. I mean, it's understood. And so therefore, these scholars would describe murder to be the illa of qisas. That prayer is done when the sun declines, the dhuhr time. What is the wisdom behind that? It's something which is unapparent to us. I mean, there's really no way that we know. So those scholars which make a distinction would say that therefore the decline of the sun from its meridian is the sebab of dhuhr prayer. So you see how they're using the distinction in terms over here? If the wisdom, if the reasoning behind the cause is known, then they will refer to it as illa. But if the reasoning is unknown, unapparent, they will refer to it as sebab. Other scholars just use the term interchangeably. They call it sebab, they call it illa. They make no distinction between the two terms. So again, when you're reading a legal textbook, you would have to know what the author is, you know, reasoning. Yes, illa would be like murder, for qisas. Qisas is the, you know, taking someone's life to cause murder. I mean, the reasoning there is very clear, right?
or the pronouncement of divorce, right, leads to marital separation. I mean, it's, you know, very clear reasoning behind.
But the decline of the sun resulting in Zuhr prayer, I mean, why is it the decline of the sun? Why is it, the sun reaching the meridian, or for instance? So they call that seba. Anyway, that's just something to know. I mean, the most important thing for us to know in this aspect is that one of the, going back over here to the Sharia law is a divine address that pertains to the acts of the morally obligated and consists of a demand, an option, and a declaration. This is one example of a declaration, cause, where Allah has declared that this cause, right, the lawgiver, Allah declares that this cause results in this ruling, this law. Okay? No, it refers to the cause. It refers, Eta and Seba is the cause, okay? But they make a distinction, some scholars, where they will use Illa when they know the reasoning behind the cause, and Seba when they do not know the reasoning behind the cause, as a term, okay? But they both refer to the cause itself. Okay. So the Illa, if we're following that terminology, of Wuhar prayer is the decline of the sun, and the Sebab of Kislas is murder. Oh, yes. Sebab, but the reasoning behind it, excuse me, it's the other way around, yes. The end of Kislas is murder. I'm just paying attention to please. So, the end of Kislas is murder, and the Sebab for Wuhar prayer is the decline of the sun. And then other scholars, they would use the term interchangeably. They say the end of Salah is Luhuk, the Seba of Salah is Luhuk. Okay, let's take another declaration by the Sharia. All right, the next one is al-mani'. Which means impediment, we can say in the English language, impediment. And it's the exact opposite of seba, or enda, cause, right? And so therefore, it is an apparent fixed quality that when affirmed prevents that ruling. Okay, let's give an example again with the murder. We said that murder is the sebab for a qisas. If we later find out that the murderer, okay, is the father, okay, and the one who was murdered was his son or daughter, then fatherhood becomes an impediment, a manner for qisas. Because the Prophet ﷺ forbade the application of the qisas upon the parent killing the child. A parent who kills their child will not be under qisas. So then we would say that fatherhood is the manner or the impediment for the qisas. Okay, let's think of another example. The khutbah, not khutbah, but khutbah, is the proposal of marriage. And this results in marriage. Nikah. So propose marriage, right? Proposal. The chutzpah. And it results in marriage. This is the seba. This is the cause. This is the result. Excuse me. This is the cause. This is the result. We later find out that the woman was in her iddah, her waiting period. Let's say she just was divorced and that waiting period had not been completed yet. Or her husband, her first husband, had passed away and she was still in the waiting period. So iddah, that waiting period, becomes a manner, an impediment to marriage. And so therefore, this apparent fixed quality, when affirmed, prevents that ruling. So we would say that marriage did not occur, that contract was not valid, because that apparent fixed quality of iddah prevented that ruling. And over here, the qisas, right? That apparent fixed quality, fatherhood, prevented the fulfillment of that ruling of qisas. Now, let's think for a moment. Let's see. Let us imagine that a manner is not present. An impediment is not present. In other words, the one who did the killing is not the father of the one who was killed. Does that necessitate that the ruling will be fulfilled? Huh? Yes? No?
No.
Okay, who said no, and why? Yes?
Because it's left at the option of the family of the person who's killed.
That's true. That's true, but in a more fundamental sense. Right, or no, there might be other reasons why that ruling would not be fulfilled. For instance, it might not be qisas because maybe, even though he was not his father, he might have been insane. No, as I tried to use the word killing, I'm sorry. Maybe I confused you by the example. Okay, sorry. All right, let's say shedding of blood. All right, let's make it a little bit more general, okay? So blood is shed. I apologize for that. Blood is shed, and so therefore, we know that the one who shed the blood is not the father. Does that necessitate, right, that the qisas would be applied? No, because, and likewise, the woman was not in iddah, right? Does that necessitate that the marriage is valid contract? No, because there could be another reason why the marriage is not valid, right? She is his sister through, fostering, right? Through suckling, okay? Yes?
Can I just say back to the definition of what you did before?
Seven.
Yes, seven. So, it's the clause that results in the judgment. So, that doesn't hold entirely out of it, does it?
Let me just hold it entirely out.
Well, say that's not the sabbat or kisas then?
No, yeah, shedding of blood is not the sabbat of kisas.
Right, so it's not okay, right?
Right, it's murder that's the sabbat of kisas. But I just want to use shedding of blood just to show that just because an impediment does not exist, it doesn't mean by, you know, converse, right, that the sebab is there, because there might be more than one impediment. I mean, when we say that something is an impediment to a ruling, right, there might be a number of impediments. And so therefore, just because one impediment is not there doesn't mean that another impediment is not there. Just because an impediment is not there doesn't mean that the cause has been fulfilled. And so therefore, the opposite is, while it is true that an impediment or a mana, when existing, affirmed, prevents that ruling, the opposite of that, when it's not there, does not necessarily mean that ruling exists. Okay, is that clear or some confusion too? Okay. Yes, brother.
It was good. But if you said that the sabab was, once the sabab has occurred, then the action must occur. Is that, say, for example, somebody does zina, then they must be killed or whatever? Because then, when the woman came to Rasulullah sallallahu alaihi wasallam and confessed to that, she was given the chance to just leave the matter, not for the punishment to be taken out on her. Or has that been abrogated now? If somebody says that, they must be killed.
No, there's two issues here, okay? The act of zina, right, when done by a person who is in ihsan, which refers to the state where they are in a lawful marriage, okay, whereby which they can receive sexual gratification, okay, and they commit illicit sexual intercourse, makes that person, is the cause for the stoning, okay? Now, the application of that ruling, the actual stoning of that person, needs a number of matters. Either a confession is a cause for that, okay? Or four witnesses who see the individual in that act, all right? So it's one thing to say that zina is the sebab for stoning to death. And that is a valid statement, okay? But the actual application of the stoning, right, either is by confession, is the cause for the actual application, the fulfillment of that ruling, or for witnesses. So it's not abrogated, but, you know, there's a distinction by saying that the ruling is affirmed for that individual, but the actual application of that ruling by the judicial authority, the judge. All right. Let's take another example, okay, of a manner, okay? A person commits zina, right? Stoning to death is the cause, okay? We find out the person lives in a non-Muslim land, right? His, by the fact that he lives in a non-Muslim land, is the manner, the impediment for the application of that law. Somebody's had a question.
No, I was just going to say, you said the lack of rulings is the man.
Excuse me?
The lack of rulings is the man.
If there's no confession, then that might be. Or, for instance, but let's make it something which is better, right? One of the four witnesses, right, there's something wrong with his testimony. That's a little bit more clearer, okay? So then therefore his testimony is discounted. That would be the matter for that, okay? Instead of it's just non-existence initially. Yes?
I thought I heard you say stoning is the cause.
Did I say stoning was the cause? So stoning is the judgment, the ruling.
Okay.
No, that's fine. Okay. Let us take the third declaratory law now. I think we just have about 10 minutes, right? 5 minutes? Okay. I think we have Salah right behind us, so we need to do brothers and chats, huh? Cool, so, okay, so we'll do this one, and that'll be a good song. All right, the third declaratory law is what is known as shout. All right, which might be translated as condition or stipulation. And we may define it as that which its absence necessitates the absence of that ruling or law, right? But its presence does not necessitate the existence or absence of that ruling. Okay, so a shart or a stipulation or condition, you can say in English, is that declaration which the lawgiver has placed, which when its absence necessitates the absence of that ruling. That ruling does not exist, but its presence does not necessitate the existence or absence of that ruling. And let us give an example of a stipulation. Covering the awra, which for the male refers to from his knees, right, to his waist, is a stipulation, a shelf for prayer. Now, so if the awra is uncovered, right, so this condition is absence, means that the prayer, the ruling for prayer is absent. But let's say that the awra is covered. Does that mean necessarily that the ruling of prayer is fulfilled or absent? Okay, why? Who said no and why? Yes, I'm just... Okay. No, the covering the shoulders, yes, I mean, that's a command, but we're talking about the condition here. Yes, brother.
Because there are many conditions which validate...
Absolutely, because there are many conditions, okay? Among which is facing the qibla, among which is the entering of the time, among which is a purification, the wudu, right? So just because you fulfill this condition, this stipulation, doesn't necessarily mean that this ruling has come in effect. Because there are other stipulations, as was mentioned. But once this stipulation or condition has become absent, then this ruling definitely, if this is not there, then this ruling definitely is not there. All right? Now, these conditions are of two types, two categories. We may divide them into. And that is those conditions which pertain to that act becoming incumbent. incumbent or obligatory, since that was the term I guess we used earlier. And those acts becoming valid. Okay, so let me put two conditions for prayer. The entering of the prayer time and the facing of the qibla.
Yeah, these two conditions or stipulations of the prayer, which one is a condition for validity and which one is a condition for the incumbent or the obligatory nature of that act? Yes, brother.
The first one, the entry of the time is incumbent.
Right. Okay. They're both stipulations for the prayer. But the act becomes, what is a stipulation or a condition for it to make it obligatory? When the time for prayer comes in, that action becomes obligatory. The other one is a condition or a stipulation for its validity. And so therefore, it might be obligated. The prayer time might have been come in, but you're not facing the qibla, so the act is not valid. All right? So when we look at the stipulations for any act of worship or for any contract between two human beings, like buying and selling, divorce, marriage, whatever, we look at the conditions. There are some conditions which make the act obligatory, and there are other conditions which make the act valid. Obligatory or incumbent, the word used is wujub, which from which we have our word wajib. Remember we did wajib, right? And the word valid, I want to use an Arabic for this brother if you want it, is sikha. And we will have sikha. And we will have a term which we will come to shortly, will be the next term, which we'll do in the next class, sahih, which is a declaratory, another declaratory law. Let's see, what else do I want to say before we. May I go ahead and break this? Okay, what are the three declaratory laws that we've discussed thus far? Sebab, okay. Manar, alright. Shab. We'll just put cause. Impediment and might be condition. There's a principle in the Sharia. If you're going to say that something is a cause, an impediment, or a condition for any ruling, you must have an evidence from the Quran or the Sunnah. You cannot, say that something is a sebab, right, for something. Something is an impediment for a ruling. Something is a condition or a stipulation for a ruling without having an evidence from the Quran and the Sunnah. And so therefore, the scholars determine the causes, the impediments, and the conditions for the various rulings by something which is known as istiqra. Istiqra, which means that you go through all the texts of the Quran, all the verses, right, and all the hadith of the Prophet ﷺ, and you look at, okay, what are all the conditions for prayer? What are all the impediments for prayer? What are all the causes for prayer? And you go through them again for the zakah, and for the fasting, and for marriage, and for buying and selling, and for all the different human activities or acts of worship in which the Sharia has a law for. And so therefore, sometimes the scholars will differ in determining, right, the causes, the impediments, and the conditions, depending upon how good their istiqra was. Because some scholars might see a cause, which is other scholars might have not noticed, or might argue that it's not a cause. They might see an impediment, which other scholars might have not noticed, or might not see it as an impediment. They might see a condition which other scholars have not noticed, or might not see as a stipulation for that act of worship or for that contract in that human interaction. Okay.
I guess we can take a couple questions and we'll adjourn for a few questions. Istikhara, how to define it? There's a term in the English language. Let me see. What is it? Anyway, if it comes to me, I'll mention it. But what it means is to, and there's a term, because it exists also in logic. Induction, right? Induction by numeration. Induction by numeration. I think that's the equivalent, English equivalent to what he does. I think that's the English equivalent to it. Yeah, if somebody knows logic and knows a better term, then. Maybe it's by enumeration. That's what it is. By enumeration.
Is it induction or deduction?
I think that's what the debate was. Is it induction or deduction? I think it's deduction. Anyway, somebody can look up in a dictionary and come back. Just it's a lot easier. One word, and never mind yourself. All right, brothers. Inshallah, ta'ala. I think I'll take it for this morning. Inshallah, after a month, we'll, I guess there's an announcement. There's not one there. So, all right.